Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Mark.
Welcome to Flop Pod!
The Christmas special! Woo! Mark, we're so happy to have you back. As a matter of fact, anyone that I had interviewed after you had kind of taken your hiatus, they were very disappointed when it was just me, which is sweet for you, but not great.
It's very sweet.
It's very complimentary to
you. Yeah, it's very complimentary. But I mean, I think it's like we are like a golden duo. Golden duo? Yeah, that's a thing. Sure.
Sure.
Like we're a great duo. And I think people were just like, I don't know, like that vibey energy? I don't know.
No, I absolutely agree. And I would say that you certainly make me a little less serious, which is nice, rather than being like a CBC investigative journalist that like I like to do that kind of play in my head. So it's just been interesting without you, but I'm so delighted that you're here. So tell us what you've been up to.
What have I been up to? I think the last time I was on the pod was the episode with Aiden?
Maybe.
I think that might be. And that was back in the summer. And here we are 4 months later, 5 months later. A lot has happened in the past little while. I'm now officially 100% a registered, licensed architect with a stamp who can do architect.
Congratulations.
Thank
amazing.
You. It's been a very long road of, I like to tell the story of when, I remember it was after my first semester at architecture school and I was, at home for dinner. It was Christmas, I think. At home for dinner and we were just talking about, university and stuff. And I remember saying, you know what, guys? I am a firm believer in everybody taking a gap year after high school before they go to university. And like dad dropped his fork because he was my high school vice principal. And like the thing you did as the son of the high school vice principal was you went to university right out of high school. And he said, like, well, why? Why would you take time off? I said, because dad, like I finished high school. I went straight into university. I did horrible my first year there. I, you know, decided that I wanted to do theater and I wanted to work in the arts. And I did that for 15 years. But the entire time that I was doing it, there was always this voice in the back of my head that was, you know, architecture, just kept creeping in and creeping in until like 15 years after I graduated high school. I was like, well, I'm gonna go do architecture. And I said, like, you know, yes, I had a really, really great time, you know, working in theater and film and dance, and I feel like I've had a really great career in that. But it took me, because I went straight into university and I didn't take that time to think and figure out what I really wanted and how to focus myself. I said it took me like 15 years to get to this point where, you know, I'm now in my mid-30s and I'm back in university and I'm really loving it and I'm doing really well. And now, you know, I am an architect.
But do you think you would have been ready for that had you been 19 or 20, though?
No, not at all. It's interesting. I remember going back to Mon to upgrade my courses before I applied to Dow to do architecture. There were three people in my math class who were over the age of 30. And I knew who they were because every time the prof would say something, you know, funny that we found funny, like three people in the class would laugh and I'd go, oh my god, like I'd look around, who's over 30, who's over 30,
who's an adult,
like who's an adult, because everyone was 18, 19, and I wouldn't have been able to do it. I think it took all of that time and all of that experience for me to really sort of focus and understand, like, and to gain a perspective on the world through the experiences that I had and the experiences of, you know, friends and family. Like it, I needed that in order to get to where I am today. I think it was last year when the Fund the Arts campaign was out. And that was a big thing for me. Doing theater and film and dance, that is the reason that I am an architect today. You know, learning Excel from Amy House at the LSBU Hall. Those skills that I didn't think I was ever going to need or use became fundamental to a career in theater and the arts. And they were also incredibly transferable over to going to school for architecture and having a career in architecture.
And certainly communicating, working in a group setting, being able to find out what someone wants because you're working with directors constantly and you're learning different communication styles, which I imagine would not be that much different from working with a variety of clients that may or may not all speak the same language and may or may not really know what they want, just like some directors may or may not really know what they want.
Exactly. I think another, like, what really came in handy was the acting. That, you know what, sometimes you have a client who's got this wish list that is so long, and you've got to put on that face. Yeah, you know what? That's definitely something that we can look into. How about we focus on this, but we'll definitely keep that in mind as we move forward into, like, the next phase of the project. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I think that color scheme is fantastic. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you really want to add a fifth story to that? Yeah, that's something we can look at. That, you know, having to be always optimistic and positive, yet trying to be realistic when you're dealing with someone else's money. And a lot of times, a lot of the work that we do at the office is public architecture, so it's the people's money, keeping things in check without freaking out the client, that helps a lot.
Moderating behaviors. Absolutely. Well, I have always been a big fan of everything in its own time. I've always considered myself actually a little bit of a late bloomer, and it had felt that things had passed me by, and we talked previously that we're both character actors and kind of just waiting, you know, for that moment to bloom, because I wasn't getting what I knew I was capable of when I was 20. But now a lot of things are coming to fruition and have come to fruition. And I keep reminding myself that, you know, it's not a race. We're all here. It's like, you know, it's cheesy. It's the journey. It's not the end, but it is. It's not a race. You don't need to get there. And ultimately, if I did get there and, you know, I was whatever I thought I wanted to be at 20, I'd still have to keep working afterwards. So it's the quality of your work, and how you feel about it that is important. And I will say that I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I'm gonna come back at you with a question.
Okay.
Which is sort of the same one that you just asked me about. We have talked numerous times about, you know, not getting those parts when we wanted those parts. Similar to, you know, me being ready for architecture school at the age of 18, 19, do you think that you would have been ready for those parts or those, like, the opportunities that you're getting now at 18, 19?
Not in the same way. You know, the time machine, you can go back and you can say, I think that I've always been the same person and I've always been prepared. But the more you know, the more you know. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh my God.
Write that down. That's our t-shirt.
Audience, you know, she just did like a head thing and it was totally hilarious.
But that's just it, you know? Yeah, experience makes you who you are, and adds the vibrancy and the texture that you're gonna deliver in every scene. So it's why I like to work with so many people that are different than myself, and I like to invite new you know, emerging artists or people that might not often work in my field, because it's exciting for me to get that novelty and that new perspective. So I think, could I have done the things at a younger age? Sure. I would have loved the opportunity, but now I get to give it. And I think that's great too. I just like working and learning, so I'm happy to have the opportunity now and happy to continue to have opportunity. Everyone, I am hireable.
She knows how to put together a really great team. Speaking from experience, doing Pursuit this past summer was absolutely wonderful. That's something else that happened this year. Doing Pursuit in the middle of the pandemic, learning how to rehearse and perform and engage and connect with other performers in really much more intimate ways than I sort of ever had before, because we couldn't be so close. We couldn't physically connect. It was a really, really fantastic opportunity, a fantastic experience. The show was up on the Pursuit, the film, was up on the RCA YouTube page for a month. And I went back and watched it, like, maybe every second day.
Oh, that's lovely.
And there were different things that I kept noticing about it. And through ArtsNL, you did the Art at the Time of COVID. There was a really, really great documentary about the making of Pursuit. And it was just really interesting. Like, I throughout this whole experience, I think those two projects really sort of encapsulate what I felt and how it felt to, you know, be an artist and trying to work in these weird, weird times.
So, so weird, but I've been so, so lucky because we mm-hmm. got to do Pursuit, and then we got to do Ladies Who Lunch.
We did get to do Ladies Who Lunch.
And we were presented by RCAT, which is the first time for us, and we have applied for many years, and it just, the timing hasn't worked out, and it hasn't been the right project. So again, everything in its own time. Yeah. I just think the idea that we're doing radio performance, that it was a little bit easier to translate what we do mm-hmm. to a digital medium already, because our genre is already meta. So I'm so grateful for those opportunities, but they wouldn't have come had we not been working for the last 10 years.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Christmas. Do you have any family Christmas traditions?
Family Christmas traditions? I mean, there's the standard one of every Christmas Eve when I was younger. But even now. So, side note. My parents are snowbirds. And so for the past 4 years, they've been doing Christmas down in Florida. This is the first year that they're not going to be in Florida in the past 4 years. And in my head, I'm going through all of the things that I know I'm going to experience when I get out in Bjorn to spend Christmas with my folks this year. Every Christmas Eve. I'll call this the tradition. Mom saying, "Oh, Ed, get to camera now and take a picture of the youngsters with your stocking." And, like, sure enough, Mom has all of her stockings still. All of her baby ornaments that have, like, our name and the year we were born, and it all goes on, like, the tree. And every year we had to get pictures of us hanging it up on the tree, and then pictures of us with the stocking. And when my niece Anna was born, it was, like, an added element into all of that. So, like, here we all are in, like, our late 20s, early 30s, and we're hanging the thing on the tree. And then we're got our stockings. And then, oh, now it's baby Anna in picture. And now there's this and now there's that. I mean, I think dinner, food, is a big tradition. Every Christmas Eve, Dad will do bacon wrap scallops, which is fantastic. And we go down to my sister's place for Christmas dinner every year as well. My brother-in-law, Chris, always cooks Christmas dinner. And it's like, it is fantastic. Other traditions. We used to go to church. That ended the year that Dad got the time wrong.
Ah!
On when service was supposed to be. I think he mixed up like the AM and the PM.
And then that was it.
Oh, we're not going there no more. No, that's it. And then like you get out there, it's like, sure, there's nowhere to park. It's like, no, there's nowhere to park. Like driving around like the scrape in Bjorn. It's like, yep, not going to get out there this year. When I was really young, a big tradition that we had was Boxing Day evening. We would have hot turkey sandwiches. And then everyone would pile in the car and we would drive all around Bjorn and look at the lights. Mm-hmm. It was like all about the Christmas lights and just seeing who had what up, to the point where friends of mine in high school, we turned that into our own little sort of tradition. And we would pile in someone's car and we would drive around, but we would try to find the houses that were competing with each other. And there were these two houses that all year long they were competing with each other. This guy put up a fence at the end of his and like a gate for the driveway. And then like a month later, ooh, they got a nicer one done up with like brick around it and stone around it. And then you see that someone's got something else done on their house and something else on their house. And every Christmas you could see them competing more and more and more and more with each other. And it was just so much fun to just like drive up and stop and go, they're winning this year. Now, that's who's winning.
Now, in your drive around, had you ever stolen anyone's decorations?
No. I would not do something like that. Well, I can't say I wouldn't, but no, I had never done it.
So, some of the students that I teach kind of told me a little bit about a rumor that there were a crowd going around in a pickup truck stealing ornaments from people's houses, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, oh, what a grinchy thing to do. Oh, that's really awful. And then, on Wednesday, we had the Christmas lights stolen off our house. And my partner calls me up at work. Linda, any chance you took those Christmas lights with you? No. I mean, look, it's a possibility. It was a very fair question. Yep. Lord knows I'm always taking stuff and dragging it, you know, to one show or another. I was like, no, why? Because someone had stolen the Christmas lights off the house. And let me say this. If you need the lights, you're welcome to them. You know, if you're in a position where you need to steal my Tim's card or sleep in my car, you know, if you're in need, that's it. And I can't begrudge anyone anything. But.
To just steal them.
Is it just mischief, though? And then what's that for? And I guess ultimately they also must be in a bad place where that's something that's fun. But I just, honest to God, I couldn't believe it. With this year, our Christmas tradition was always we do the tree a little bit later. My mm-hmm. mom was a teacher. She's also an educator, like your dad. And so, you know, school finished up a little. I feel like school finished up a lot later in the past than it does now.
It was like a day before Christmas. Yeah. And then we'd like run up in the woods and get a tree and
Yeah, and that's what it was. And so I guess it was my dad's tradition when he was growing up. You do kind of maybe you get the tree on Tibbs Eve and you'd decorate it on Christmas Eve with the idea being it's kind of distracting the children from all the excitement that's happening. So we do ours later. And in my own house, in my own family, I kind of adopted that tradition. But instead of the last day of school, it'd be the last day of classes. And I often mm-hmm. have a Christmas performance. So once I finish the Christmas performance, the last thing I have to do with the studio, we go and get our tree and decorate it. But this year, my partner would prefer that we have the tree up like basically in September, but he goes with it and that's it. But this year I was like, look, man, with all this bleakness in the world, with all of this COVID, just the Christmas lights, they're nice and they make me feel happy. So let's just do the whole let's decorate the whole thing. Oh, it's snowing and we got our tree up and it's lovely and actually managed to get the lights up because, you know, best laid plans previous mm-hmm. years. And someone stole them off our friggin' house. Gentle Jesus.
Now, you've got some really nice lights up there now. Hashtag yes. nice lights.
Yeah, well.
Oh, hashtag Huxley.
Nice lights. Yes, well, and that's just out of spite, too.
I'm going to spread joy and I don't care.
Yeah, I sent Jamie out to get more and he got the zip ties on. So good luck.
Oh, nice.
And we set up a camera.
There's a house. When I walk home from work in the evening, there's a house like Water Street West that they have like the color change stroby disco scene going on in the house upstairs. And every time I walk home, I'm like, oh my God, this is like Griswold's, but like disco.
It's a moment.
It's kind of amazing. But even seeing, like, I don't have any Christmas lights up in my apartment yet. I'm not grinchy. I'm busy and I'm tired at the end of the day. And
I'm Scrooge. I'm not a Grinch.
I'm not a Grinch. I'm Scrooge. It's great. I mean, I'll give you time off and like maybe like three pieces of coal, whatever. But like, I'm just like, I'm tired and I've got lights there ready to go. Like I even took them down out of the closet. I'm like, this is good to go. I'm ready to go. But even just sitting in my kitchen and looking out the window and looking at the houses across the street with their lights, it's like, that's nice. And like just walking down the street and seeing the lights. Mm. I know that, you know, everyone started putting up their lights right after Christmas. I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to get old really quick. But it's just been a really, really lovely gradual, I guess, lightening for, you know, a pun.
But like spring with everything, yeah, kind of blooming. I have found the same thing. And, you know, without that community and without seeing people, it's a little bit of, oh, there is someone alive there. There is life that we're not seeing. And that's kind of what it's meant to me. So I sent Jamie out to the store. And then he bought the expensive lights because there was no cheap lights left.
Oh, my God.
He got the zip ties and put them onto the fence.
Oh.
And that's it now.
Oh, they're going to stay there now.
They're going to stay there until 2025, least. Yeah. Every summer, sorry, neighborhood. Like, they're
sorry,
just
you're just going to light it up.
They're there now. but that's it. We have some special guests on the pod this week, and we've asked some of our previous guests to talk a little bit about their favorite Christmas songs. I'm wondering, Mark, if you have one that you love and maybe one that you don't love so much.
So one that I love, I love Winter Song by Sarah Bareilles and Ingrid Michaelson. It's absolutely beautiful. It's kind of sad, but really beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that song, but I think my favorite Christmas song, these days, it's been for a couple years now, is a song called Love is Christmas by Sarah Bareilles.
Mm.
And it's just about love and how that is really what the holiday season is about. Like there's a line in it, I don't care if the gifts are wrapped or the strings of light are broken. This whole song about like, you know what, here's all the crappy things that are inevitably going to happen, but it doesn't matter because love is Christmas. And it's just, I mean, it's like Sarah Bareilles has a beautiful voice and the piano was gorgeous. And I heard a live performance that she did with her sister, which was just like, oh God, bring on the tears. Absolutely beautiful. But I think that now is my favorite Christmas song. My favorite traditional Christmas song is Come All You Faithful. And your next door neighbor, Sandy, is doing, she's been playing since the beginning of December, fiddle tunes on Instagram.
She has.
And it's been really lovely. It's like, okay, I'm getting, this is really nice. Just like a little verse. And she played O Come All You Faithful the other day. And I'm like, oh God, this is so nice. Like, it's just a beautiful song. And it reminds me of beaches. And all of the good things that, like, Bette Midler and Barbara Hershey taught us. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
And let's hear what is Kyle McDavid's favorite Christmas song.
Ooh.
Hi, Flop folks. This is Kyle McDavid here to tell you about one of my favorite Christmas songs. And it's actually not a Christmas song, it's a New Year's song called What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? I remember first hearing this in probably the late 90s. There was a Gap commercial with Rufus Wainwright sitting at a grand piano singing it. And I just fell in love with it. I was really into pop piano stuff like Ben Folds 5 and Rufus Wainwright during that time. Still am. And this song, I think I also like it because it's a little bit more obscure. It's not the, you know, the Christmas standards that we hear time and time again every year. So I kind of like that about it. And it's also filled with hope, but also a tinge of sadness, because New Year's Eve can be celebratory, but also, I guess, a little reflective and can be a melancholy time for some people. So here's a little bit of What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? Maybe it's much too early in the game. Ah, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock that night.
Friend Sharon, her favorite Christmas song, I do believe, is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is also one of my favorites.
Oh, it is. I can't get through it. I cry. In my interview with Marquita, I talked about it. And Sharon is actually going to sing a little bit of it. So let's hear why it's her favorite. Mm.
There are so many great Christmas songs, but I think the one that is gonna be running through my mind this year is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. It's a beautiful little song, and it reminds me of Home Alone, and it reminds me of Judy Garland, and I think it just reminds you that just because it's Christmas doesn't mean that all of the world's problems are solved, and you can't expect that of any day of the year, and there will be a Christmas next year. And in the meantime, all you can do is surround yourself with love and light. Merry Christmas, everyone. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away. Here we are, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years, we all will be together, if the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
be talking to Melanie O'Brien next.
We sure are. I love her.
What's her favorite song?
Well, she has a little affinity for Elvis.
Ooh.
And now I worked for Britannia Tees, which Kelly Jones operated out of Water Street for a number of years, and I worked there with my cousin Jesse Meyer. And one of the things about working at the tea store is that the Elvis Christmas album was a standard. Another thing you need to know about the Elvis Christmas album is that it's only half an hour long. So, if you're doing an 8-hour shift, that is an awful lot of Elvis Christmas for you.
Oh.
And the other thing that I'd like to note, if you are familiar with like this holiday classic album, is that there's a song called Mama Loved the Roses, which is about his, you know, his deceased mom. That's really quite depressing and goes like, Mama love the roses. And
was that Cher?
I mean, Cher is influenced by Elvis. Did you not know that?
Obviously. Yeah, well, I did not know that, but obviously.
That is her influence, and that is what she modeled her singing style after.
Roses.
It's blue. Worth a listen to everyone. But after play number 45... it becomes a little bit laughable, and so we would just go into giggling fits. Melanie is talking about her favorite song. She's not singing it, but if you want to hear her sing...
Shameless plug for Melanie O'Brien. Melanie O'Brien is in a group with Philip Goodrich called The Duds, and they just released a Christmas track called Christmas Days. You can check it out on their Facebook page. And it's really, really nice. I just listened to it before we started this, the pod today.
Yeah, and maybe if I'm allowed, we'll share a little bit of that clip. And if not, I'll cut this out. here's Melanie.
Hello, what is my favorite Christmas song? I have to go with Elvis Presley. Really anything from his Christmas album, because I grew up listening to it. And I have some really fond memories. There's always a debate about what to listen to in my house Christmas time because my husband grew up listening to Nat King Cole, which is beautiful. I love that as well, but it's pretty different than the Elvis Presley one. So yeah, I would have to say anything from the Elvis Presley Christmas, particularly Winter Wonderland. I love what he does at the end. It's really fun. The whole, and we're a walking in a winter wonderland. Merry Christmas. Wake me up at midnight, honey, light still on the tree. Take me outside our house in the middle of the street. Snow is falling softly, darling, landing on your cheek. I can't think of nothing sweeter than this December week. I say, hey, stay forever, Christmas days. Take me to a party. Talk and dance and laugh, coming home on unsteady feet. Standing in the bedroom, honey, lights all over me. Green, gold, red and silver as we fall asleep. I say, hey, stay. Stay.
Stay forever Christmas Day.
Stay forever
and
Christmas
I said,
Day.
Marquita Walsh and her roommate Una are actually going to sing a little bit of White Christmas for us.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your day
sweetest. Thank you, Marquita and Una. That's so, so lovely. Before we sign off today, Mark, do you have a Christmas memory that you'd like to share?
I do. So I was at an age where, if anyone is a Simpsons fan, Fluffy Bunny had fur where he did not have fur before. it was, you know, around the time that, you know, Santa was putting stuff in our stocking, like, deodorant and things like that.
Oh no.
And so, everybody gets new underwear at Christmas. That's just something that happens. You know, it's going to be under the tree or in a stocking or something. Anyway, where I sat, so there were three of us. There was my older sister, Kelly, my younger brother, Andrew, and myself. And we would sort of be positioned around the tree with Kelly on one end, me on the other, and Andrew in the middle. And I was just like kind of like tucked away in a doorway. So like I could still see everyone, but like people couldn't really see me, but they could, but they couldn't.
You're being creepy. Okay,
I am being creepy, but no, it was totally fun. I was like 12, 13? And I remember opening up a little stocking present. And I like picked it up and I squeezed. I'm like, oh, it's kind of like soft. Is it like mitts? Oh, it must be new underwear. And Santa had, I don't know if Santa was playing a trick or just mistook my sister's and mine stocking. But I opened it up and here is a pair of like silk panties. And I was really embarrassed, but like something else was happening and nobody was looking at me. So I quickly just like bunched them up and I put them behind the speaker Dad had a big stand-up speaker for the stereo. I put them behind the speaker, like, tucked them in there, and, like, the paper, and, like, no one could see it. No one saw what was happening. And so I, you know, go into the stocking one more time, and another squishy package.
Oh, God.
And it was two of these, panties wrapped up.
Oh, Lord.
Put in my stocking. And I took them and I bundled them up and I put them away. Like, I stuffed them behind the speaker. And I was just, like, so paranoid. And I kept, like, looking over at it. And then all the gifts were open. Now it's time to have dinner. And people are running around the house. And we're getting ready to go to this place. And getting ready to go to that place. And I, like, stealthily went back down to the living room. And made sure no one was looking. And went in and, like, grabbed the underwear.
Oh, Lord.
And, like, threw it over on my sister's side of the tree.
Oh, Lord.
That is a Christmas memory.
Oh, well, therapy for Christmas.
It was hilarious. Like, I could still feel it in my hands. Like, it's just so weird. Like, I don't know if it was, like a misgendered situation or if it was just, like, hey, stockings look the same after Santa's visited so many houses.
Although, I don't know if you've ever tried on a pair of silky drawers, but they are very nice.
Oh, Pants, you don't know me well enough.
I do. This was a formative experience for you, clearly.
Yes, it was. It's like up there to when Mom gave me a rainbow hat and mitt scarf set. The Christmas after I came out, because it was all, like, sweet. Rainbow and sweet. But then she also gave me this beautiful stained glass sun catcher of what was clearly a dragonfly.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it. I'm like, oh, my God, this is really beautiful, a dragonfly. And Mom said, no, it's a butterfly because you've come out of your cocoon. And I said, oh, no, these are dragonfly wings. And Mom's like, no, it's a butterfly.
Just,
like,
let her have it.
Okay, Mom.
That is so sweet. so sweet. We are going to close out our Christmas special with actually Kyle McDavid's favorite Christmas song. And surprise, myself and Phil Goodridge recorded a track, and we also have a video that's coming out next week. So enjoy What Are You Doing New Year's Eve, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
Question in advance. What are you doing? question in advance. What are you doing?